Bones. Bones.
Bong.
German businessman evades EU light bulb ban by importing heat balls.
Bong.
Dancing goat fights off stray dogs.
Bong.
City stages vinegar drinking contest.
Bong.
Traffic cop charged by wolves.
Bong.
Children should not pick wild food unsupervised, says Quango.
Bong.
Rare moss in danger as owners of thatch houses prefer perfect roofs.
Bong.
Lion and meerkat friendship echoes the Lion King.
Bong.
World's largest toast mosaic dedicated to mother-in-law's face.
Bong.
Wallaby died after being plied with drink and drugs at Irish disco.
Bong.
Britain's most haunted village invaded by mysterious flies.
Bong.
Mum has children on 10th of October 2010, 9th of September 2009 and 8th of August 2008.
Bong.
Man bins £113 million lottery ticket.
Bong.
Woman stabs fellow student during anger management class.
Bong.
Pigeons have urge to gamble.
Bong.
Toddler rides Burmese python.
Bong.
Mum told to feed ducks granary bread.
Here comes another big raccoon.
Hello, welcome to Paper Cuts. That was the week's news headlines.
Yeah.
I'm Sam.
I'm Tom. Hello, how's it going? Welcome to Paper Cuts. It's the show critics have described as futuristic metro replacement, left-wing Daily Mail, and Big Society News Round in equal measure.
Wow.
This week,
some good plaudits.
Thanks, yeah. This week, George Osborne blurted out his comprehensive spending review like a man playing financial word kabaddi. His speech featuring more cuts than a poorly lit Christian Bale movie scene. And Wayne Rooney announced his intention to leave Manchester United, stating they were unable to match his ambitions. A source close to the player states that he wants to open Wayne Rooney's Brain Uni in coalition with old school friend and 3&M partner Michael Gove as part of his independent school strategy. So there's a lot going on in the world. That's the main two stories, I think, that have been cropping up.
Yeah, so the spending review was announced today. That's, what, 40% cuts or something to government spending? I already feel like 60% of the man I was yesterday, but that could be because it's very cold outside.
That's true. It has been very cold, hasn't it? I recently bought a new glass desk, and I've been finding it's very cold. It's like working on top of a fridge. It's not good. But yeah, that's kind of winter, isn't it? That's what happens. Is it winter now? Do we officially?
It feels like bloody winter.
Yeah, we don't really seem to have. I think this season's things all going. We had like a sort of.
Yeah, like last week was all right.
That's true. We went on holiday, didn't we?
We went to Wales. Even in Wales, it was all right last.
We went surfing. We went surfing in the sea in October. I think I got a bit suntanned in October in Wales. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it did get a bit chilly, but it was not unbearable by any means.
No. So come on then. What's your big news story of the week? What do the people need to know about?
Okay, probably the top story is, this was like the biggest news story of the year, which might be a little baffling to people outside of Britain, but the woman who put the cat in the bin, she was sentenced this week, so that's a big story. She was fined £250. Possibly she's got off a little lightly. So she was charged with two offences, causing unnecessary suffering and for failing to provide the cat with a suitable environment. Apparently bin's not a suitable environment. Who knew?
Yeah, so she got fined £250. Which, you know, doesn't sound like a lot, really, does it?
No, she got off relatively light there. The RSPCA said the sentence should deter others from abusing animals. But, you know, if you're a rich person and you feel like you feel like doing something nasty to a cat, I don't know if this will put you off or not.
That's true. Because basically you can get a fine of up to £110 for putting your bins out at the wrong time, overfilling your bins or putting recycling into the wrong boxes. That's £110. So, you know, that's it. Rich people have got games going on. They can just do this. There's a big sort of psychological study about the fact that if you charge people a sort of small amount for like leaving their kids at school a bit later, then the parents will just use this as a service. And I think you're right. This could happen. If you don't fine them too much, then it'll become a sort of plaything for rich kind of evil people. You know, but at the end of the day, most evil people tend to stroke cats if the films I've watched are anything to go by. So
yes,
you know, they're less likely. That's the sort of tension that happens to cats. It's a difficult, you know, you think you'd be able to trust an evil person, but apparently this woman straight in there. I think it's all, to say it's been blown out of proportion would be not an overstatement, would it?
She's taken a lot of stick for this. The judge said the media interest in this case has resulted in you being vilified in some quarters, and I've taken that into account. So I don't know, if somebody is harassed by the media, does that mean they should get a smaller sentence?
I think you've got to take it into account, haven't you? I mean, she Imagine how you feel. She's like, does she really deserve the amount of attention she's got?
Probably not. But I don't know how much this is going to deter other people, because you've got to be very unlucky to be caught on video camera if you're going to put a cat in a bin.
That's
so
true.
I think we can probably assume that people will go on doing this thing. How many cats are put in bins without us ever knowing about it?
You
see a lot of missing cat signs, and you see that this cat's just run away. But maybe there are hordes of gangs, youths, or maybe old mafia types who go around kidnapping people's cats, putting them in bins.
This youths would often get blamed for this, but this woman was not a youth.
No.
She's got no excuses.
She was 45.
Exactly.
Definitely not a youth.
So we think it's not good. But basically you're right. It's the point is that it was caught on CCTV.
Well, it wasn't CCTV. Was it just the people were worried about what was going on with their bins, so they stuck cameras outside their house.
They were right to do so. The prosecution basically they showed the footage and then said that in essence is the case. It was a sort of classic.
Open and shut case, really.
Open and shut.
No need to call Morse.
No. Well, they've given them a £15 victim surchargeand charged costs of over £1,000, but I assume that wasn't based on the lawyer's fees, when it's basically pressing play and saying, it basically speaks for itself.
If you were to get a multimedia producer to do that, they probably would charge £1,171 or
You're
more.
You're damn right. And if you want to get in contact with me for any multimedia production, at Tom Hoffman on Twitter, just drop me a message. Apparently, the cat has been rehabilitated, though, so there are no... You'll be glad to know.
What does cat rehab involve?
Well, it's hard to say.
I didn't make me go to rehab. I said, meow, meow, meow.
Well, that's it. You know, it's it sounds stressful. But, so that really is the big news story, really.
So maybe
I think the cuts have been announced. Why didn't they charge more? I'm surprised they didn't, jump on the popular bandwagon. Two birds, one stone. People are saying, why should we be cutting the defence budget? Why don't we just make her, pay sort of £6.4 billion as a fine, and then you're sort of, counterbalancing some of the cuts that were proposed. This is the perfect way to sort of solve both things.
So tackling crime at the same time as reducing the deficit, making people pay massive fines.
Yeah.
Can she afford this is possibly one question that might crop up.
Well, we could work out some sort of long-term payment plan, but...
get Ocean Finance involved. They'll sort it out.
Exactly. Yeah, precisely. Wonga.com or other financial websites are available.
Hmm. And last week we talked about, a way to raise money by forcing people to pay money to use a park bench or a train seat so that, you got to sit in the seat for a limited amount of time before some spikes came up and you had to put more money in. That's a good way of swelling the coffers.
Exactly. It all works.
I think Osborne has been very unimaginative here.
Well, I think it's all part of the big society initiative, Everything's Fine, which is where members of the public are allowed to fine each other for antisocial behaviour. It'll be done by some kind of Oyster card thing. I mean, this is a proposal. What do you think of that? Good idea, bad idea? You're on the train, someone is really loud headphones playing bad music. I mean, that is two offences right at once.
Mm.
You could sort of use some kind of card reader that gets their Oyster card from their wallet, basically sort of charges through their clothes, whatever. They get a fine, everyone's happy. What do you think about that? Good system?
It sounds like a good system, but when you have drinking games where anyone can fine anyone else, it very quickly gets out of hand. We know this.
That's true, but we need the money, so if it does get out of hand, that's not sort of like we're at a bad party, everybody needs to get drunk, so it doesn't matter if everyone's fining each other. Same thing here, we've got no money, let's all fine each other, and then we'll sort of grow. It's like the New Deal, it's sort of what Roosevelt was after all along.
A bad party is kind of an analogy I haven't heard before for the recession, but it's possibly a good one.
It's a bad party. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, we're fans of the big society concept. I've started running a school. Tom, you're setting up a hospital.
I am.
How's that going?
Well, there's been no Clostridium difficile so far.
Good work.
None of that's been going on. There's sort of no infections that we can speak of. It's all been fine. So basically, so far I've not killed anyone.
Excellent.
How many people have died in hospitals
great
this
stats
week?
There.
Exactly. You just can't argue with that sort of stuff. It really delivers the goods. So one of the things we were worried about that I mentioned earlier on was the giving ducks the right type of bread. Don't know how you feel about this one, but this was my favourite news story of the week. Probably it's you sort of wonder why this was a news story. This is in the Telegraph, one of their big news stories.
The Telegraph loves the animal stories.
That's true.
A big part of their news agenda.
Mrs. Taplin was in the park feeding ducks, but she didn't get the approval of a council warden. The park ranger advised Mrs. Taplin that white bread was unhealthy and she should give the ducks granary or wholemeal in the future.
Oh, my lord.
He told her that white bread was the equivalent of giving her son chips with every meal. I was a bit stunned, said Mrs. Taplin, 34, a dance teacher. There were loads of ducks around us, and they looked quite hungry. We had about 5 slices of bread, and we all threw bits towards them. The ducks fought a little over them, but they seemed to enjoy it. Then, a man in a fluorescent waistcoat who was holding litter, a pickup stick, came over to me and said, I know you mean well, but giving them white bread is not good for them. He said, next time...
Some of those ducks might be gluten intolerant.
That's true, exactly. Very good point. Celiac ducks. He said, next time if I brought wholemeal granary or birdseed, that would be better for them. It's actually a fairly good point. I don't think ducks are really supposed to eat bread, probably.
It's probably not their natural habitat that they've eaten through evolutionary history.
Yeah.
I don't know, what do they normally eat?
I don't know. You should know this sort of thing, didn't you study biology?
Yeah, biology, biology. Not animal diets.
Well, surely that's part of it. Yeah.
Maybe do these? What's the ideal diet then? Maybe they should be eating lentils or salads or, you know.
I don't know, but basically it says they should not feed. The RSPB have urged the public not to feed any bird with bread, as it fills up their stomachs and doesn't give them nutrients.
What if it's what about compromising? That's kind of best of both stuff, or the 50-50?
Yeah, I think that's what the campaigners are calling for.
Maybe, what about butter? Are they allowed butter on their bread, or do we have to use kind of olive spread?
Yeah, it's Flora Light or Lurpak, lightly salted. So that was quite a big story in the Telegraph.
Okay,
there.
So watch out if you're trying to feed ducks. The other kind of animal cruelty story I read about this week, fox spends 2 days with watering can stuck on head. The RSPCA rescued a fox. It's got round-the-clock coverage on Fox News. The RSPCA has rescued a fox which is believed to have had its head stuck in a watering can for 2 days. 2 officers from the animal charity were needed to help the creature remove its head, prising out its fur a bit at a time. The alarm was raised after the fox was seen walking around a back garden in Solihull near Birmingham in a very distressed state. They think that the fox went without food or water for 2 days, but it seemed to be in good health. The officers said the incident should serve as a warning to people who leave items lying around. I mean, what were the owners of this watering can thinking, leaving a watering can lying around in their garden? How did it not cross their minds that a fox might come along? And, well, they think the fox was probably trying to get out a frog or a mouse that was sitting at the bottom of the can, and he got his head stuck. I mean, how they did not foresee that, I don't know.
I know.
Idiots.
Yeah, that's harsh.
But the consequences could have been a lot worse. The RSPCA inspector, Jonathan Radcliffe, said, I have no doubt that he would have died if we'd not managed to get the watering can off, either from dehydration or from not seeing where he was going and so being hit by a car.
Well, it's a perilous life for the fox with a watering can stuck on the head.
It really is. Okay, so last week, one of the biggest stories we were talking about was the Chilean miners and their rescue, which was happening as we recorded the last programme.
But we should have really been contributing, but we were just here cheering from the sidelines, though, you know.
Yeah, but it kind of serves as a warning not to devote too much time to your big story, because it turns out the Guardian reported that the BBC has spent so heavily on its coverage of the Chilean miners' rescue, it's been forced to reduce its coverage of other major events like next month's G20 summit and the Oscars. They overspent by, well, the cost of reporting the rescue apparently exceeded £100,000, according to a memo written by the BBC's World News editor, John Williams. They are currently £67,000 beyond the agreed overspend limit. And this means that next month, when the G20 summit happens in Seoul, normally they would send both the political editor, Nick Robinson, and Robert Peston, the business editor, and now they can only afford to send one.
Wow, that is—it's not absolute nightmare. I mean, how are you going to cope with that?
Does this mean that Robert Peston is going to be kind of doing the political stuff as well? Maybe if they only send Nick Robinson, we're going to have to do Robert Peston's voice to do the.
That's a good idea.
But I wonder if there aren't kind of ways around this where they can kind of work out in a more economical way of sending both of them by having them, you know, share a plane seat or kind of travel by train instead or something, or maybe they kind of both have to share a hotel bed.
Well,
there must be a way of working this out. After all, these are kind of austere times for us all.
I don't think the British public's going to be able to handle the thought of Nick Robinson and Robert Peston sharing a bed without a mass epidemic of vomiting and illness. So I think that's something you should be cautious about. And as we saw with William Hague and the aid, it's not as tolerant in society as you would think. Yeah, sure, we think let's put Robinson on Peston's lap or for a train ride. Yeah, we think that's fine. you know, not everyone's as liberal and tolerant as us, Sam, and people will start to talk.
That's a good point. That's good. Or maybe another way of getting around it would be to send kind of have kind of a CGI version, a digitally animated version of one of the reporters or both of them. I mean, they have so many graphics on BBC News reports now. They must have a CGI team that's like the same size as Pixar.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and it also, especially Robinson's pretty. You mean you've probably barely got to use any shapes at all. There's like a circle and then sort of a little bit of hair shading. I think I could knock up a pretty good Nick Robinson animation using paint. Probably just now. And the next time you're talking, I'll knock one up and see how that goes.
Robert Peston, he kind of the way he talks, it kind of sounds like he is a computer program. He's like, it's the very sophisticated computer program that's trying to imitate the ways that humans talk, but it hasn't got it quite right. And you can, you know, if you listen carefully, you can pretty much tell that that's definitely not a human that's talking.
Can you give us a little burst of Peston?
I can't do a very good Robert Peston impression.
Neither can Peston, so don't worry about too much. No. So well, that sounds like it's a pretty heavy stuff.
Meanwhile, at Sky, this message was sent round to all of Sky News' journalists from their financial controller's office. It says, it's been brought to my attention that people have been using the words bribe or fraud when submitting their expense claims. Whilst in most cases this has arisen because people are covering fraud or bribery cases, please can everybody refrain from using these words in future. Sky doesn't tolerate the use of bribery or fraud in the workplace and has to investigate each case. We'll be contacting the people concerned. Thanks.
Well, so what are the implications of this, do you think?
It means that Sky's journalists need to come up with some different words, you know, alternative words to use in their expense claims, like skullduggery.
Skullduggery.
Or do they need to be that specific about what cases they're...
Maybe they
could just use the names of the people that they're talking about rather than writing bribe or fraud.
That's true. It doesn't leave a lot to the imagination, does it?
Hmm.
Gaff News, and this week... The presenter of ITV's West Country Breakfast Bulletin informed astonished viewers that an animal more commonly spotted near the North Pole had turned up in the seaside town of Bude.
We're back on animals.
I forgot about this. Yes, good point. We can't help it. But this is more about people. This is a gaffe.
Okay.
It wasn't the animal's fault. A walker in...
It's never the animal's fault.
What about the fox?
No, that was the,
owner of the
owners of the watering can.
All right, I think that's 50-50. A walker in Cornwall has caught... This is what the presenter said. A walker in Cornwall has caught an extraordinary sight on camera. A polar bear has washed up on a beach near Bude. The bear comes from the Arctic Circle, and an investigation is underway as to how it could have ended up there. You're thinking, wow, a polar bear's washed up in Cornwall. That's pretty...
That's quite surprising.
Big news. Closer inspection revealed that the polar bear was, in fact, a cow. The farm animal had been bleached white by seawater.
The colour might have changed, but a cow is a different shape and definitely a lot less hairy than a polar bear. There are ways of telling the difference.
I mean,
but you don't need a, you know, qualified zoologist
for
this.
That's it. You didn't know the sort of what a duck eats,
I know the difference between a polar bear and a duck.
But what
and
if
a cow? Been...
You can't talk. You don't even know the difference. What difference between duck, a cow, and a polar bear? I mean, this sounds like a joke. So you know, that's the thing. It's a bit embarrassing. You mean you don't have to have that? Also, geography could also play a role, and it'd be fairly unlikely for a polar bear to wash up.
Yeah, Bude is quite far away from the Arctic Circle, last time I checked.
Yeah, it seems to be. So there you go. I mean, just be careful. ITV probably needs to get some...
So did we get to the bottom of how the cow washed up on the shore? Did the cow actually come from the sea?
Or I think the...
somebody
I think
more just dumped it on the
beach?
How
did the cow get to the Arctic Circle? That's what I'm thinking. Basically, you know, the cow, you know, it could have just sort of fallen off a cliff or something. I don't know exactly what happened. But, again, I think it washed up on there, but definitely. I mean, if you look at it, it does look a bit... It looks more polar bear-y than you would have thought, you know.
Maybe
you're doing black and white binary terms, you'd probably say, this is not a polar bear. But, you know, it's not a straight black and white Frisian type affair. It's, you know...
Is Bude on the... Is that the north coast of Devon?
I think it's... Yeah. No, it's Cornwall.
Cornwall.
I'm not sure.
Might it try to, you know, swim from Wales or something?
That's true. I mean, it's brave. It's not got a wetsuit, so it's going to struggle with that. I think I'm pretty sure that's the last of the animal news that's going with me.
Okay. What do you know about the US Constitution? Just a little quick pop quiz. Put you on the spot. What's in the Constitution?
Bears have the right to have guns. Is that right? That's one of them.
No, that's not one of them. No.
You got separate the church and state.
Yep,
that's
yep.
one.
That's very, very good. We'll stop there. That's okay, like the, that's one the of the most famous things in the US Constitution.
Got to do that.
So if you're a US politician running for Senate, then you'd think you'd probably know about that, right?
Yep.
So this Christine O'Donnell, she's a Tea Party candidate from this kind of far right movement. Can we call them far right? Is that
yeah? Why not?
We'll call them far right. But no,
maybe have you learned nothing from the Fox News example? We should call them something else.
Centrist.
Spectrum. I don't know. I don't know how to define it, but we should be cautious.
I read recently that they do have links with the English Defence League, according to a report in The Guardian. Anyway, Christine O'Donnell, she's running for a Senate seat, and she's attracted controversy in the past by it emerged that she once admitted to having dabbled in witchcraft.
Mm. We all have, you know.
Yeah, but she was.
I gather that she did. She dabbled in witchcraft, but she never joined a coven. That was what she said.
She never joined a coven. No, so she was having a debate with her Democratic opponent, Chris Coons, and she said, "Where in the Constitution is the separation of church and state?" So, you know, Chris Coons explained to him. This is in the First Amendment. The First Amendment says, it's quite clear, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment or religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. And she said, you're telling me that's in the First Amendment? her people quickly tried to play down the blunders by saying, oh, no, she meant that the words separation of church and state don't appear in the Constitution. But it looks pretty bad for her.
Yeah, but I think that the worry with this issue is that she's kind of distracting everyone from the sort of closer seats. It's like, she's probably not going to get in because she's clearly slightly off the wall, if that's a neutral enough term for me to use.
She's getting quite a lot of support, though. She's like the new Sarah Palin.
Well, yeah, but she didn't do that well, did she? But I think the thing is that this may be distracting attention, making a lot of the kind of slightly less far-right seem a little bit more, you know, normal by comparison due to their lack of witchcraft history and understanding of the
She's not the only one who's had some embarrassing gaffes. So the Republican Senate candidate Joe Miller, his security guards forcibly handcuffed a local journalist after a public event in Alaska last week. And Nevada Republican Sharon Angle recently told the room full of Hispanic students, some of you look a little more Asian to me.
Wow.
She's hard to get away with that kind of thing.
Pretty much, pretty tough. One of my favourite things from this week is something that was on Dig. It's about a list of the favourite variations of the mullet. This is a classic haircut. I mean, how many different types of mullet would you say there are?
I don't. What's still around now, or are we including kind of extinct types of mullet that died in the 70s or 80s?
Mullets don't die. You know, it's just fashion in everyone's soul that dies. Mm. Okay. They've listed 12 mullets. No, 10 mullets, sorry. These are pretty special. You've got your classic mullets, the traditional sort of kind of short at front and long at back. The business in the front, party in the back hairstyle, also known as.
Business in the party in the back.
Yeah. The Kentucky waterfall, the yes no, the neck protector, the 1090, the mud flap, the neck warmer, and the sphinx. These are all nicknames for the mullet, but you've got the mulhawk as well. It's a classic sort of mullet that's also a mohawk.
Okay.
That's a strong look. The kung fu mullet, as demonstrated by people such as Chuck Norris, pretty impressive. The fee mullet, which is a female mullet, popular one there, still very stylish. The AC mullet, which is demonstrated by people as AC Slater from Saved by the Bell, classic mullet look there.
You ever tried any of these looks yourself?
Well, one I have tried.
Sometimes it's been getting dangerously close.
The bowlet, that's one that I've sort
bowlet.
Of suffered from. It's sort of a combination of the bowl cut and the mullet. So it's like half a bowl cut, and then the back half is mullet. So you've got a sort of, you know, a mushroom sort of at the front,
okay,
and then a sort of sweeping.
That's, doesn't sound like a good look.
It's, you know, it doesn't sound like.
You got a picture
like
there?
I do have a picture there. That's that one there, the bowlet. But it's not as good as a skullet. That one's probably my personal favourite.
Holy Christ.
Yeah, that's where you kind of have like a shaved head and then just at the back. So there's not really anything on the top.
The love child of Rapunzel and a Nazi, neo-Nazi.
Yeah, it's not a good look at all. So, yeah, there's the frolet, which is like an afro mullet. That's pretty impressive. The dreadlocked mullet. And the
basically, any kind of hairstyle can be combined with a mullet.
Exactly. Way more than you would think.
It's the beauty of the mullet.
Yeah, so
it goes with everything.
That's the thing. So, I mean, you've never really had a different haircut since I've known you.
No,
you've always had the same haircut.
I don't know if, you certainly couldn't stretch to call it a hairstyle. It's just hair.
Yeah, what do you ask for when you go to the hairdresser? Do you bring a picture of a celebrity or something like that?
Which celebrity do you think that might be?
I don't know. I'm just curious. No, you're the one with the picture, not me.
I never know what to say. The last few times I've had a friend cut my hair for me, and that's been easy because I don't have to ask for anything in particular.
That's true. I mean, it is a stressful time, isn't it, getting a haircut?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just make it shorter, you know.
Yeah. There's too many mirrors anyway because... they're the experts, aren't they? They shouldn't be, you know, taking too much direction from you.
Exactly.
What other walks of life do you get that sort of level of input to a trained professional? Mm. You know, not other doctors sort of looking at CCTV of what they're doing to my, you know, kidneys, whatever. I'm just going to let them get on with it. I'm just going to focus on sort of just staying still.
Oh, well, yeah. While you're removing that cancerous lump, do you want to take a bit more around the edges of my liver?
Exactly. You know, I'm not the best person to be asking. So there's too many mirrors. There's no need for it. They can see the hair. That's what they should be doing. Maybe have a mirror if you really must. But there's this sort of plastering and mirrors and all that. It does distress me.
Okay. Something has to change.
Something must be done. Isn't there some sort of campaign? I think that's what they're writing about in France at the moment, actually. The prevalence of mirrors in hair. I can't be sure. I've not read fully about it, but I've seen some cars on fire and I've kind of filled in the blanks. But.
Mm. Well, is that not just because the French people are being asked to work a bit harder or they're having to work for longer they really don't like that kind of thing?
No. I mean, it's a difficult one. I think I sort of don't anticipate retiring at all as being like a thing I'll be able to do, I guess. Mm. So it doesn't worry me too much. Like the retirement age in Britain's now gone up to 66.
Yeah. It seems sensible. I mean, it's been 65 since people used to die at 66.
Yeah.
And now people live into their 90s often. It doesn't make sense to keep it at 65. But a lot of people are pretty angry about it.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of understandable. It depends what job you do, doesn't it? I mean, if you were a kind of labourer, you're going to think, there is a limit to how much I'm going to be able to do when I'm 66. Mm. Whereas sort of cushy media jobs like things that we do, sort of you carry on doing that forever.
Yeah.
That's another thing that brings me on to another thing. The BBC were asking, is there a Wayne Rooney in your office? This is his want-away thing. He doesn't want to play for Man United anymore. You know, and they were trying to say pinpoint kind of football player types in the office. So whether you've got a sort of maverick talent who's, you know, not really a team player. I mean, what role do you fulfil in your office? You strike me as sort of a Fernando Torres, gone a bit off the ball recently, distracted by paper cuts, or different thing.
I'm not going to comment on that.
I'm definitely sort of Dimitar Berbatov, sort of, you know, people often look at me and think he's really not doing very much work, but then I'll sort of smash out a classic move and win the game, so, you know, I can just about get away with it. That's sort of my...
So the difference between you and Berbatov is you've done a bit of running in your time.
That's true.
So you did a marathon before, right? How was that?
I did. That was kind of fun. Okay. It was good to do. It was good to have done. It wasn't as fun when I was in the middle of doing it.
Okay.
And the whole training thing, that's not very fun. I haven't really run since, that's much I can say.
Okay. If you were doing a half marathon and the course was an eighth of a mile too short, do you think you would have noticed?
My issue with this is... that I think there's quite a lot of variability in a marathon route or even a half marathon route. So if you sort of snake around, you could end up doing quite a bit more.
You're right. It's quite a wide course. So if you're kind of hitting every apex and running the shortest route, you could be shaving time off anyway.
Definitely, you could probably be doing like an eighth of a mile, knocking that off quite easily just by running slightly differently.
So you think you wouldn't know with any certainty that you'd done it in a shorter time if the course was shorter?
I think that's the case. I would be confused.
Okay. Well, this happened last week in a half marathon in Wales, in Cardiff. 15,000 runners took part, and the course turned out to be too short because they changed it at the last minute because there was an obstruction identified by race organisers. That's all the information we had. But some people were pretty angry. Runner Mick McGeoch. That's almost certainly not how you pronounce his name, but he was annoyed. He said he's run so many of these races, he can predict to a very high degree of accuracy what time he's going to run. And if he was asked if he was bothered, he said, "I certainly do mind. There's a bond between race organisers and the runners." Do you feel a bond with the race organisers when you're doing an event like that?
No, but I was never sort of trying to win or, I just wanted to get round. I've done the Cardiff Half Marathon, actually.
Oh, yeah.
I would, you know, I'd be very happy. I would definitely not be complaining if they took off a little bit. I was dead by the end of that.
Everyone's doing it in a slightly... So normally he says it takes him 1 hour and 20 minutes, and this time he was 1 minute and 10 seconds faster. I'd be pretty pleased.
Yeah,
you can legitimately say that's his best time.
Yeah, good point. What's he complaining about?
And this time the race was granted championship status by Welsh Athletics, which is the governing body for athletics in Wales, which means that for the first three Welsh men and women to cross the line who are registered with Welsh Athletics qualified for Welsh championship medals. Now, you're part Welsh. Do you think you could have qualified for this?
I did do that particular event, and I certainly did not come in the top three.
This was the first time it was granted championship status.
Well, so. even if I had come in the top three, I would have not. It wouldn't have mattered. I think without that incentive, it was very hard for me to up my game and run about, you know, cut about 30 minutes off my actual finishing time. But yeah, some of the people that run that thing,
like, so not being Welsh enough was not the biggest of your problems.
No, that was one of the things. Not Welsh enough, not fit enough, not fast enough, legs not long enough, knees not good enough. There were a lot of things against me there. One thing that sort of lightened my my soul this week has been about the Swedish professor who was devastated after his laptop was stolen. But to his surprise, a week after the theft, the entire contents of his laptop were posted to him on a USB stick. I'm very happy, the unnamed professor told the local newspaper. This story makes me feel hope for humanity. So he left his laptop hidden behind a door, and when he returned, it was gone. So all of his stuff, his credit cards and calendar and stuff was left, but all of the stuff on his computer was gone. It was like his life's work. I've documented everything in that that's happened in the last 10 years. I should have backed it up, but I didn't, was the sort of excuse, but... That's pretty good. I'm you know, a fan of that.
Pretty good to nick a laptop.
Well, that bit not so good, but you know, it's difficult times, isn't it? I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean,
the point is, like, yeah, it's not ideal. Let's all just put this out there. I would rather people didn't nick anyone's laptop. Don't do that. That is bad. But if you are going to nick a laptop, it's the same thing. Like, if someone nicked my phone, I'm sort of shouting after them, "Can I have the SIM card?" You know, you're like, if you got the phone, that's fair enough. Got that insured. Don't worry about that. But I want my, you know, I lost my BlackBerry, you know, maybe a year ago. And
how did you lose it?
Well, this has been the subject of much debate. So I don't know whether it fell out of my pocket.
Inquiry.
Or whether it fell out of my pocket, or whether I may have been tweeting on a night bus and fallen asleep and someone nicked it out of my hands. It's pretty hard to tell. I can't say which was the truth, but the phone was gone. And there were some classic draft tweets going on that phone, and some brilliant radio ideas. So yeah, if you see my idea for an ITV cop drama, when push comes to shove, about Detective John Push and DCI Andy Shove, if that idea comes to fruition, I'm going to be very annoyed. I'm going to know who's nicked my phone. So that's all I'm saying.
Okay. Well, I'll keep my eyes peeled.
Keep your eyes peeled.
I've definitely seen worse things on ITV.
Exactly. So you'll be careful with that.
Anyway, yeah. So we were talking. Yeah, it's bad to steal laptops.
Yeah.
In summary, but yeah, I mean, I guess that a lot of stuff that gets stolen has a more emotional value to the person it's lost from than monetary value that the thief can claim.
Yes, that's true. Speaking of kind of social media type things, did you hear about this Twitter feed for Greater Manchester Police?
No.
One of England's biggest police forces tweeted every incident it dealt with over a 24-hour period. They were using Twitter to give the public an idea of the workload officers face as a kind of way of their kind of protest against the cuts and trying to say, we're doing a lot of work. So yeah, they
did it work or did they get cut?
I don't know, that hasn't come through. That level of detail was not mentioned. It was a comprehensive spending review, but it wasn't that comprehensive. So they displayed over 3,205 tweets. Among them was a report of a man holding a baby over a bridge, but when police attended, it turned out to be a man carrying his dog who was scared of bridges. Another was a complaint about someone smoking on a flight into Manchester Airport, some shoplifters in Bolton, and an overly aggressive driver in Wigan. But there were a lot of serious things as well going on, so, you know, they're trying to make a point that they have a lot of work to do. And for every one of those incidents, there's a lot of admin and other bits of stuff that you've got to do as well, so... it was kind of
tweeting as well,
and you got to get that exactly. You know, we all know what that's like. You sort of got to pack in your tweeting into your, what people should follow us on Twitter, shouldn't they?
Yes.
What's our Paper Cuts Twitter?
Paper Cuts Radio is our username. So
okay, yeah, twitter.com/papercutsradio. You should click the follow button and a world of magical joy will flood into your smartphone / Twitter client.
Yeah, we'll definitely post some stuff soon. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, these mullets, it's my description is very evocative, but you really need to see some of them. The skullet, for example, that just has to be seen to be fully appreciated. Or maybe you steal one yourself. If you are going to do one yourself, make sure you go fully with the picture. So we'll put that on the Twitter. Do follow us. And you can follow Sam Wong,
yeah. You could follow Sam Wong, but, you know, he never says anything. Some guy is just kind of sitting on
he's
that username.
Twitter name.
And he doesn't even tweet anything.
You should report him or something, you know.
I looked into it. I don't think there is a way to report anyone.
That's terrible. Well, I managed to get in as just Tom Hoffman.
But you spell Tom with an H. With an H.
That's true. Well, it's one of my to make me more Googleable. Back in the day when I was a kid, I changed it before Google was popular. So I was like a prescient child. But my name's Tom Hoffman, Tom with an H. And I thought that's great. You know, I'll be sort of most famous Tom Hoffman with an H because there probably won't be another one. But annoyingly, there's this Dutch actor who is not famous, but he's obviously considerably more famous than me. As I'm not famous at all. So he beats me on like 20 pages of Google are all him, this very minor Dutch actor. It's not even his real name, it's like his stunt name. So I'm livid at this guy. I'm getting nothing. That's... But I beat him to Twitter. So in your face, Tom Cornelius, whatever, who changed the name to Tom Hoffman, you swine.
Can you get a registered account? Oh, is that going
to... get it verified? I don't think they would go for that. No. But maybe. Maybe we'll have to see. Depends if people, retweet us and send a link around. You never know; it could happen. But I don't think I would really warrant a verified account.
Okay, so Manchester police—they've got too much stuff to do. Starbucks staff are being told to slow down apparently because people are complaining that their coffee is shit. People have been complaining about this for years. They think that if the baristas are told to don't make more than one cup of coffee at a time and, use steam milk for each drink separately. They think they're going to make better coffee and this is going to improve their business. What do you think? Is that going to work?
I don't know. I don't really like to go to Starbucks.
No, I don't like the last time I went to Starbucks.
Well, there's one right next to where I work. But I don't like their whole small, medium and large done in Italian sort of thing. That I don't like.
Mm.
So that's one of the reasons I don't like it. Coffee's not particularly great.
No.
And it's quite expensive. So all these things are sort of working against it, really.
Yeah. A spokesman for them said that the trials of the new guidelines had not caused longer queues. If the baristas are making fewer cups of coffee in each time and the queues aren't getting longer, that must mean they're losing customers. It doesn't seem to make much sense for them.
Well, yeah, it could just be a publicity stunt. You never know.
That's true.
Yeah, we could have been suckered into it.
So at the moment, this is only happening in New York, supposedly. It's not happening in Britain, but the executives are watching closely to see whether similar measures are needed in Britain. But what's happening in Britain, Pizza Express staff are getting different kinds of instructions. They're being taken for lessons in how to flirt with customers. This is at Pizza Express's experimental restaurant in Richmond, and they're hiring in an actor called Carl James to teach the waiters how to seduce customers. This seems pretty unorthodox.
That does seem not appropriate, really. I mean, have you ever done that sort of service type job?
I've never worked in that.
I've never done waitering or that, but I used to work in a lot of pubs, and I never got any tips. I was like, you know, never got tips at all. I think I was a very efficient server, you know, good chat, but I never got the tips. Don't know what the deal with that was.
You think you could have used some flirting lessons?
I definitely could have done, because there were a lot of people who were not as good as me at serving drinks. You know, I was very good at that, but they, you know, had better kind of flirting skills, obviously, and that's what's worked for them.
Mm. There's a big advert outside the tube station near where we live, which is for Air New Zealand, and it's got pictures of kind of cabin crew sitting about laughing, holding huge letters that say, "Is yours an innie or an outie?" So I don't know if this is meant to be representative of the kind of chat that you're going to get from the cabin crew if you fly Air New Zealand. Maybe they thought, you know, the standard kind of conversations you have with air stewards, like, you know, do you want lamb or fish, or can you put that seat up, or a bit kind of, you know, cold and perfunctory.
They need to more liven it up. Chat. Well, that could
go straight for the kind of, what kind of belly button do you have? It seems like a trend.
That sounds great fun. in other milk news, as you were talking about Starbucks there.
Okay.
Have you heard about Benitez's own seagull rant that happened recently?
Is it Rafa Benitez?
Rafa Benitez, former Liverpool manager and current Inter Milan manager. He, speaking ahead of the clash today, clash with Tottenham, he said, "We have a saying in Spanish, which is, white liquid in a bottle has to be milk. What does it mean? It means after 86 points and finishing second in the league, what changed? The Americans. They chose a new managing director and everything changed. So what's going on? It's simple. They changed something at the end. They changed everything. So, white liquid in a bottle, milk. You will know who is to blame."
Wow.
Do you know white liquid in a bottle, milk is in Spanish? You know, white liquid in a bottle, do you know what that is? You're pretty good in Spanish.
Liquido blanco en una botella.
Well, it sounds like now it makes full sense. Pressed further,
it's legit.
Pressed further, Benitez added, "White liquid in a bottle. If I see John the milkman in the Wirral where I was living with this bottle, I'd say it's milk, sure." So that clears that up. Okay. In other job news,
any clue what he's talking about?
No. In other news, Ministry of Justice worker made bomb hoax calls in bid to go home early. It's a classic manoeuvre. You know, you've all been in that situation where you're sort of thinking the clock's ticking a bit. One thing with this is that Andre Lake, dope-smoking Ministry of Justice worker, made two hoax bomb calls in a bid to go home early. He admitted making the 999 calls at 7:15 and at 8:20, as he no longer enjoyed his work. That's quite early to be making those calls. You sort of think maybe by like 2:00 in the afternoon, it's starting to drag.
Yeah.
Your lunch hasn't really done it for you. But he was sort of straight in there early on. He said he no longer enjoyed his work. He had no annual leave left and wanted to leave early. So, you know, there you go. But he may well be charged. Police went to his house and found loads of weed. So, you know, think about it.
What's he been spending all his annual leave on? So.
Well, exactly. any other exciting news for us this week?
I've got news about a new trend. This was in the Guardian that the ukulele has become the instrument of choice for busy people working in the city in their stressful jobs. They use it to unwind. Apparently, PricewaterhouseCooper, they held their first ukulele team building event in a London hotel last week. They were all taught to play "I'm Gonna Be" by the Proclaimers. That's the 500 miles thing, and apparently for those who are very career orientated, the ukulele is a great release. This is according to somebody from the Ukulele Orchestra of Great Britain. It's easy to get pretty good at it very quickly, and that means it encourages playfulness instead of competitiveness. I think they're probably right. It's kind of everything sounds hilarious on a ukulele.
That's true.
We've got one in our flat. It's
we've got two in our flat.
We've got two.
That's true. When will the fun never end?
We should come up with some kind of ukulele-based theme tune.
We'll bring them into the studio next time.
Mm.
I've got an amazing video of a kid playing Hey Jude on the ukulele that I found this week that I haven't shown you yet, but it's kind of mind-blowing.
Okay, we'll tweet that.
We will be tweeting that, so make sure you check it out.
Apparently, the ukulele has replaced the recorder as a starter instrument in many primary schools.
That is the best thing I've heard, you know, for a
long
time.
Did you have to do recorder in school?
Even worse than that, I had an ocarina,
which
has only got four holes and is even more shrill than the recorder.
Is there an ocarina used in, what's that, Zelda?
Yeah, the Ocarina of Time.
Mm.
It was not as cool as that, but it was an ocarina.
I think kids would love being able to play kind of video game music.
That's true, but the Ocarina of Time in the game is sort of slightly, you know, clearly much more tuneful and easier to play than the actual ocarina itself. It's like a very unpleasant sound. It's like a small bagpipe, but even more shrill. So I don't think you should be giving kids that. Ukulele, quite hard to tune, though.
It goes out of tune very quickly.
Yeah, a lot of kids who are playing out of tune ukuleles, it's going to be pretty annoying as well. So,
I had to do recorder and glockenspiel in music lessons at school.
Wow. At the same time, or?
Not at the same time.
Okay. Yeah. Rubbish. Okay, any more exciting stuff?
That's it for me.
Okay, well, yeah, I think that's pretty much all we've got time for. I think we'll leave it there. Thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Join us on Twitter.
Yeah, twitter.com/papercutsradio, and you'll find us on there as well. Have a great week. We'll be back next time.
Bye.